Theodora clearly did not believe her. Jane, how can I put any credence into a wild tale told by a wanted criminal? But the greenhouse cliff is the greatest threat the human race has ever faced, Jane insisted. And the Mafia is crippling our attempts to avert the disaster. The Mafia? Theodora sighed. It's all true. Jane, dear, even if it is all true, I have promised the President that I will not allow my people to report this supposed disaster story. He doesn't want people unnecessarily frightened, and I agree with him. I am not going to promote a scare story. Jane got to her feet. Looking down on Theodora, she snapped, Then you'd better be a damned good swimmer. She turned and stamped off into the crowd, still milling around the bar at the end of the corridor. Wally came back with two fluted glasses of white wine, looking surprised that his boss was alone. The mayor of New Orleans frowned at the somber faces around her. She tapped the report on her desk, lying closed in its forest-green plastic binder. She had read the executive summary before convening this meeting. She had neither the time, the inclination, nor the technical understanding to read the full report. Now she scowled at the men who had come to talk about it. They all looked dismally grave, as if they had to make her take medicine she didn't want to take. All men, all of them. "Do you know how much it would cost to build the levees higher?" she asked accusingly. She had been a prosecuting attorney who had toppled the previous administration in a sensational series of trials for outrageously inept corruption. "No matter what it costs," said the state's environmental man, "it's going to have to be done."
"And how much will the state put in to pay for this?"
"The city's more than 5 feet below sea level for the most part," the man insisted, ignoring her question. "Do you want 5 feet of water covering everything?"
"We won't have to improve the river levee," said the city engineer. "Just the lake."
"Just the lake?"
the mayor asked acidly. The city engineer flapped his hands. "We can do the river later. The lake seems to be the first problem." "Well, the existing levee is too low for the worst-case situation," said the environmental man.
"It's 10 feet above the level of the lake," the mayor snapped.
"But, Joanna, the lake's level has been rising. That's the Lord's truth," said the majority leader. "You know, I live out by Metairie, and I tell you, old Pontchartrain is on the rise. Why, you can see it on the causeway, getting higher all the time."
"How much in the past 5 years?"
The environmental man flipped through the copy of the report he held on his lap.
2 inches, he replied.
"How much in the next 10 years?
Squinting at the numbers. 4 inches, maybe 6.
"And the existing levee is 10 feet above the water level?"
The man from the Federal Severe Storms Office piped up.
"It's not the average water level that causes the problem, Ms. Mayor. It's the worst-case scenario."
"Worst case?"
"Exactly. For example, usually the Mississippi stays within its normal banks. But when it floods, well, you certainly need those concrete levees, don't you?"
"Pontchartrain has never risen 10 feet above its normal level."
"Not even in a hurricane," the federal man shot back, smirking at her.
"And we've got the pumping stations."
"But what if—"
"No what ifs," she snapped. "This city has all sorts of problems, and they all require money. Do you think I can go to the voters and tell them they've got to pony up how many hundreds of millions of dollars because Pontchartrain is rising 2 inches every 5 years?"
"Somebody's got to do it," muttered the environmental man.
"Not in my administration," she said coldly. "Maybe in 20 years or so the lake might be getting high enough to warrant raising the levee. Maybe in 20 years it'll all dry up and disappear. Who knows?"
The city engineer said, "If there's some disaster, like a really strong hurricane, or—"
"We'll face that problem when we come to it," said the mayor. "I'm not about to spend the taxpayers' money on some scientific theory."
34. Vasily Malik strode on stage like a conquering hero, with a broad smile and a happy gleam in his eyes. Dressed in an impeccably tailored blue suit, he went straight to the podium and gripped it with both hands. The hall was filled to overflowing with news reporters. Video cameras focused on the newly elected chairman of the Global Economic Council. Two big TV monitors flanked the podium, one displaying the BBC's broadcast, the other CNN's. Both pictures were the same, except for a minute difference in the angle at which the cameras were focused on Malik's triumphant expression. Jane Scanwell sat in the balcony section reserved for VIPs. All the other council members were there. Mohammed Sharif Sibuti, looking slightly nonplussed, as if he did not fully understand what was happening. Raffaello Gaetano, with a smile that looked decidedly forced, Jane thought. It had been 3 months since she had last seen Dan. For 3 months, Jane had hammered at her so-called friends high in the corporate world of the news media. They had listened to her story of criminal corruption in the GEC, promised to study the situation, and done nothing. They always asked for her source of information. When she told them it was Dan Randolph, they invariably shrugged her off. He's trying to get back at Malik. Everybody knows the two of them hate each other. We can't be party to a personal vendetta. We'd be sued for billions. And Randolph's a fugitive from justice to boot. Only two of her media contacts actually promised to examine the information Jane brought with her. Again, no action from them. It was like pouring a cup of water onto the Sahara. The information disappeared somewhere in the network's labyrinth of departments and bureaus. Jane began to understand that the Mafia had people in the news networks, too. They wanted Dan's information, not to broadcast and certainly not to use as the starting point of an investigation. They wanted it to help them track down the leaks in Astro Manufacturing. Now Malik stood before the media reporters, fresh from his unanimous election to the GEC chair, the sky-blue emblem of the GEC serving as a backdrop for him. Smiling for the assembled reporters and the hundreds of millions of TV viewers, Malik said, "Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You will be happy to learn that I do not have a prepared speech to give you." A titter of laughter rippled through the reporters. "However, I do have an announcement to make. After it, I will be happy to answer your questions." He paused, took a breath while the hall fell absolutely silent except for the barely audible sound of the cameras humming and the faint hiss of the lights. "My first act as chairperson of the Global Economic Council is to institute an industrial coordinating committee which will consist of the CEOs of each of the world's leading industrial corporations. The ICC will serve as a focal point for the GEC's continuing efforts to ameliorate the effects of industrial pollution on the Earth's atmosphere." "He's lying," said a voice. The hall stirred. "He's not telling the whole truth," said Dan Randolph, whose image filled the BBC monitor screen. "Ask him why he needs an industrial coordinating committee." Just as suddenly as it appeared, Dan's image winked off, leaving Malik's angry red face on the screen. Malik turned and glared at his aides, standing open-mouthed with shock in the wings of the small stage. "Who was that?" somebody asked. "Was that Dan Randolph?"
"Please." Malik raised his hands for calm and put a reassuring smile on his face. "There must be some crank somewhere in the BBC system."
"I'm not a crank," Dan said, this time from the CNN monitor. "But I think maybe you're a crook." Pandemonium among the reporters. They were on their feet, shouting questions, not at Malik, but to Dan's image in the screen. Dan grinned at them. "Hey, this is Vasily's media conference. Ask him your questions, not me. He's got all the answers you want." Malik angrily strode off the stage, and Dan's image winked out, leaving the reporters with no one to question. The TV screens showed only the GEC emblem and a bare stage.
"I want him found, and I want him found immediately," Malik was screaming into his phone. "Dead or alive, it doesn't matter. If I don't get the results immediately, I'll have you replaced. Do you understand me?"
Gaetano had brushed past the Russian's distraught secretary and come into Malik's office looking as tense and angry as Malik himself. He stood before the desk as the Russian turned off his phone with a furious bang of his fist against the keyboard.
"And what do you want?" Malik snapped.
"To help you," said Gaetano. Malik rose from his chair and leaned his knuckles on his desktop.
"The only help I want is in finding Dan Randolph."
"Dead or alive, I know." The Russian made a furious snort. "I can help," Gaetano said, pulling his silver cigarette case from his jacket pocket. Malik saw